Good evening and welcome to Late Debate. I'm Katie Hannan, and joining me in studio tonight I have Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin South West, John Lahart, Fine Gael councillor for Dunleary and Fine Gael election candidate Jennifer Carl McNeil, Sinn Féin Dublin City councillor Micheál McDonagh, Patricia McBride, lawyer and political commentator, and Harry McGee, political correspondent with the Irish Times. We want to hear from you, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie, or tweet to @latedebaterte. Now, yesterday we heard that 1,300 childcare providers had been told that their insurance would not be renewed, while many others complained that they were facing massive hikes in their insurance premiums, as there was now just one underwriter left in the market. This morning, Minister of State Michael Darcy had this to say to those childcare providers.
It's about €60 a year per child for a creche to get cover for in terms of insurance. And a creche is obliged, under the Childcare Act, a creche is obliged to have insurance. And, you know, I don't think €60 per child is a prohibitive figure for insurance.
At leaders' questions, the Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald asked the Taoiseach if the government would step in with a subvention or an emergency fund for those childcare providers.
In the event that Allianz doesn't come up to your high expectations of them, in the event that the premiums cannot be met by providers, will the state step in with a subvention or an emergency fund to make sure that the doors open in January?
I'm grateful the Deputy has at least made a suggestion, but I would contend that the suggestion that she makes is a rather reckless one. If it is the case that an insurer is unable to provide cover for a particular facility, be it a creche, be it a childcare provider, there may be a good reason for that. And for the state just to wander in blindly, no questions asked, and offered to cover the bills of a private company or even a public body would be an entirely reckless thing to do. And it just shows exactly why Sinn Féin can't be trusted by the taxpayer to be in charge of the public purse.
Just a few hours later, Minister Catherine Zappone announced that she was stepping in with emergency funding.
I'm glad then that I'm in a position to make a once-off payment of approximately on average, €1,500 to providers to reflect their commitment. This support will come from existing resources available to me in 2019, and payments will be made by the 28th of December.
And that was Catherine Zappone announcing that move this afternoon. Jennifer, that U-turn came with extraordinary speed. One might be tempted even to claim for whiplash. So speedy was that about turn. The Taoiseach very clearly saying he thought it was reckless, that anyone who would suggest this couldn't be trusted with the public finances, and yet the government tonight is doing this.
I think there are two different things. I think what the Taoiseach said is that they're not going to step in and provide insurance to every business that requires insurance. The government can't compel private business to stay open, nor can it set market prices. But what Catherine Zappone did later was announce a subsidy to recognise the extraordinary increased administrative burden that childcare providers have had to go through in meeting the end of 2019 requirements, which we've known about. There's about 4,500 that would have to re-register at the end of 2019. The regulations have been significantly strengthened in that period, which is a good thing because we're getting higher quality childcare, which we all want. But it does come with an additional administrative burden. And so what she announced today was a nod towards that, between 1,500 and 26,000, depending on the size of the childcare provider, depending on the number of children and so on. But it was in recognition of how hard the sector is working, this increased regulatory burden, and what they've needed to do to meet their 2019 requirements. So they're
saying,
separate issues.
So you're saying that that subvention that was announced this afternoon was not to help them cover these massive hikes in insurance premiums that they're facing. That's not what that was for, is
what
you're saying.
They're distinct issues. And I think through the Alliance, as I understand it from Catherine Zappone's statement this afternoon, 1,100 of the childcarers have now that needed insurance now have been provided with underwriting facilities from Alliance. And I think there's about 200 outstanding. And it may be that there are a handful of those that won't get cover because of being particularly high risk for one reason or another. That can happen in any business. But you're talking about a very tiny proportion of what are about 1,300 affected providers, many of whom in fact have insurance going in already to the 2020 period. I mean, this isn't a sort of a do or die on the 31st of December for many of them, but they're separate issues. Insurance is one, providing an underwriting for that, that's happening in the huge majority, has already happened in the huge majority of cases. And then this is a separate initiative which Catherine's opponent has announced to reflect the administrative burden that childcare providers have had in 2019.
So, but is it not the reality that the government could not possibly stand idly by if hundreds of childcare providers were going to close their doors in January? Because as they were saying very loudly, very vociferously yesterday and in recent weeks, that they simply could not continue on the basis of the premiums they were being quoted.
Well, I think, look, this will cause enormous stress and enormous worry for parents. I mean, imagine you need your childcare, you know, going into work, two parents going into work, you need to know where your child is going to be. You don't need to have disruption to children. And that's not, there's certainly no intention to try and generate any fear or to contribute to that. This is very much about providing reassurance. The number of childcare providers that need insurance are getting it from Alliance. That's going to continue. Pascal Donoghue today was out talking about how he's working with this, going to continue to work with Catherine Zappone, going to continue to work with the insurance industry. And I think there's a body of time here through December into January, into the early part of New Year, as insurance premiums require to be renewed at that time. There's a body of work to be certified at the end of December, but I think that we're going to get there. And this is just about providing reassurance to parents that they're not going to be in an emergency situation or emergency difficulties in the coming weeks and months.
Micheál, this isn't about the insurance premiums. This is about all the other administrative costs.
Well, I think your listeners heard the clip from the Dáil today, and Mary Lou McDonald clearly asked that there needs to be an emergency fund set up, there needs to be emergency assistance, or many creches, many childcare facilities face closed doors in January. It was dismissed by the Taoiseach as reckless. We were told that Sinn Féin wasn't trustworthy with public funds. And lo and behold, within a few hours, the U-turn or the swing to the other side had happened. It's quite clear that this is because of a rip-off by the insurance industry in this country. And it came in the same week where we had the Central Bank report, contrary to everything we were told by the Taoiseach and other ministers that this was because of high levels of claims and so on. We find that claims had actually decreased, but premiums had gone up. We also have a situation where it was very clear today and yesterday where creches that had no claims, no reason for premiums to go up at all, were facing increases 3, 4, 5 times what they were quoted last year. Now, this shows, in my opinion, massive profiteering, rip-off by the insurance industry. And it also shows...
But we have... This is the difficulty, I think, in terms of when we're trying to analyse what is actually happening here. I think it's quite clear that there is some dysfunction in this market in some way, because on one level you have these premiums going up, people the data showing that cost of claims going down, premiums going up hugely in terms of the motor insurance industry. Yet we have insurers and underwriters fleeing this market. If it's such a lucrative rip-off market here, why don't we have the opposite happening, Micheál?
Well, the answer to that should really be coming from the Taoiseach. He has all the powers at his command and all the means to find out the answer to that and also to rectify it. But unfortunately, he's failed to do that, and he's talked the talk of the insurance industry that it's all about high claims and so on, which are contradicted by the Central Bank report. Yeah. In terms of childcare, the childcare sector, there's major dysfunction in that sector in any case, apart altogether from insurance, because it's bits and bobs, it's all types of provision, and it's not meeting required needs. In many ways, it's very costly for parents. It's very poorly paid for those who work in the sector. So there's huge work to be done on the childcare sector itself.
Harry, are you buying this, that this wasn't about the subvention for insurance costs?
But today I listened, as somebody said, what we need the state to step in on a once-off basis and help those providers. That wasn't Catherine Zappone, that was Mary Lou MacDonald in the Dáil. And that's when the Taoiseach gave the reply that for the state to wander in, no questions asked, to cover the bills would be reckless. That's why you should never be in government. And then lo and behold, a few hours later, Catherine Zappone did exactly the same thing. And then she denied it was a bailout, or denied that it was a leg up. A little bit like Humpty Dumpty in Alice in Wonderland. You know, when I say something, it has to mean exactly what I say it to mean, and what nobody else can interpret in any other way. But it was nothing but a bailout. And the government are in a stew about this. The left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. My colleague Sarah Burns reported 2 days ago that Catherine Zappone was thinking about giving an emergency subvention, and the Taoiseach didn't know about it when he stood up in the door.
But
today,
I have to say, I was surprised myself when I was listening to Michael Darcy on Morning Ireland this morning, being absolutely dismissive of any notion that there should be any intervention whatsoever, and indeed insisting that we were only talking about €60 per child in the premiums in these childcare providers, and sure, anyone should be able to afford
that. There was a creche facility provider on Mary Wilson's Drive Time programme who seemed to contradict that. She said her premia were going up from 2,500 to something like 7,000, in the course of 1 year. So it's much, much larger than €60 per child. And the other difficulty with Fine Gael is that there's only one provider now. So Fine Gael, which
there isn't a market. There isn't a marketplace there now.
It stresses the market and the need for competition. It just doesn't exist at present.
John, what are you hearing from creche providers, childcare providers in your area?
That's why I was surprised when Minister Zappone said earlier in the week that her department and her officials haven't been hearing.
I'm going to come back to you, John, because we're having a difficulty with your mic and I don't want to have you speaking into the void. Just go to Patricia and we'll sort out your sound issues. Patricia, what's your sense in terms of the key issue at the heart of this?
I think the issue at the heart of this is the lack of an effective childcare strategy in the country. It's not simply a matter of insurance. We need to, I think the issue needs to be about government going back to looking at how parents can access affordable, reliable, safe childcare on an ongoing basis, whether that is through a tax credit system, whether that is through subsidising childcare, whether it's through a number of state-sponsored or state-supported childcare provision. But that's the fundamental problem as I see it. It's not simply a matter of insurance premiums, nor is it a matter of providers having additional administrative burdens.
But if we can just stick with the insurance issue discussion,
you know,
Patricia.
If you have someone saying, you're looking at €60 per child per year, then explain to me how, you know, people living in Dublin are telling me that their childcare costs are going up from €1,200 to €1,400
a month. Just to be clear, the €60 per child is what the minister was saying that the insurers were charging the childcare providers for their insurance
premiums.
How
does that translate into an increase of €200 per month per child from a childcare provider, which friends of mine are being notified is going to happen in January? You know, so it doesn't make sense. The sums do not add up here. So there needs to be an examination of how the insurance industry is addressing this particular market segment and what sort of regulation is put in place.
And of course, the next question is always the text we've just got in here. I'm all for supporting creches, but insurance is expensive for all businesses. Mm-hmm. Can we all expect a bailout and support in paying our insurance costs? Because I've heard anecdotal evidence, and you might have heard this in legal circles, that solicitor practices are facing massive hikes in their professional indemnity insurance. This is not just, and we all know that anything to do with children over the last 6 months have been getting these notices that insurers are pulling out of the market and they're becoming uninsurable.
Yeah, I mean, the basic structural market issue was that there were two underwriters and pricing at very different points. One of them has now removed themselves from the market and the other one is there. And like, we cannot have a situation in any industry where there's only one insurer. We need to create the conditions where we're going to have a properly insured sector, of course. That's absolutely essential. But we need more insurers in the market as well. I mean, look, I think in terms of the points you're making about the childcare and childcare investment, like, you just have to come back to it. The last 4 years have been a huge turnaround and a huge development in terms of childcare. Like, if you have a four-year-old child now, what has happened in that period is that we had an 110% increase in capacity. The investment has gone up nearly 150%. You've had the increase from 1 to 2 years pre-preschool. And all of that, the increased capacity, the increased regulatory burden from bringing in higher standards, all of that has resulted in additional costs, additional inspection costs and so on. And all of that's true. But what we're getting is a bigger, better, better regulated childcare system that's more accessible. And even in the last 4 weeks, the parents of 20,000 children in this country in the last 4 weeks are now getting additional or new subsidies that they haven't had before.
They're tiny subsidies, though, in fairness, Jennifer, when you put them side by side with what's going out the door.
But 141% increase in the last 4 years, and I think the investment in childcare needs to continue at that pace and at an increased pace over the next number of years to have the kind of childcare system that we need. But it's a good start in 4 years.
OK, John, I think your sound issues might be sorted. Okay. You were telling us that you're hearing from people in your constituency.
Number of creche facilities and preschools. So this could have been anticipated. It could have been anticipated on the basis that you suggested that there have been so many across the board insurance increases. There's a community centre, for example, in my constituency, Killinarden Community Centre, that has established a GoFundMe fund because their public liability insurance costs have risen so dramatically. What Catherine Zappone did today, in spite of all the plausible arguments put forward, the happiest people have to be the insurance companies. She has used taxpayers' money to essentially assist childcare providers to pay higher insurance premiums. Robert Troy was at, when she came into committee today, asked her a couple of really interesting questions, asked her, you know, how she could justify that. Wasn't really a very clear answer on it. But asked her also, had she met the insurance companies? Let's face it, there aren't a huge amount of them to meet in this particular space, as Jennifer pointed out.
Well, there's one, there's Allianz.
She hasn't. She said her officials have. But I think this is the critical point aside. I mean, there are general points in relation to just the government's utter failure in relation to the insurance industry. It was the first private member's bill Fianna Fáil brought forward in this Dáil in 2016. And we brought a number of measures forward. There's been a number of committees,
and to be fair, Sinn Féin had its own legislation in this area passed this evening.
So it's the tardiness in relation to dealing with that, particularly in relation to dealing with fraud. And then we saw the central bank's report this week. But the bottom line is, today, a government minister used taxpayers' money rather than addressing the premiums issue, calling in the insurance providers and saying, look, what's the story here? Explain yourself, justify it. She used taxpayers' money.
But you're according to Jennifer, it was nothing to do with the insurance issue. It was about administration costs.
But this is essentially to ensure, the bottom line is, this is an insurance issue. And the minister has used taxpayers' money to assist childcare providers in meeting their premium.
All year long, we've been talking about, and it has been a constant feature, about the increased regulatory burden for childcare, about the pressure that childcare providers are under.
But there was no talk about giving them any bailout until today.
But I appreciate that, and I don't think
so. So would it have come?
I don't know the answer to that.
So let's call it a subvention.
But
are you suggesting, Jennifer, that this would have come about if there had been no issue about the insurance?
What I am suggesting is that if you have been insured on and you need insurance on the other, I'm not suggesting that it's a bailout, but there are very different pricing mechanisms. You have to get insurance under the new market. We need more insurers coming into this market. There's no question about that. But we also need to get through the next 6 months in a constructive way. There is an additional burden for childcare providers. We know that. And I think the minister has made that step today.
How do we get more insurers into the market?
More transparency, for a start. I mean, we've been calling for this since 2016 in relation to the insurance database, so that there's this shared information between insurance providers. That seems to be, Michael McGrath has pointed that out in relation to being one impediment of insurers not coming in here, because there isn't enough information shared about the place. And then there is there's one measure which I thought was one of the most practical ones in relation to fraudulent insurance claims. Jim O'Callaghan brought it forward, that if you bring a claim is deemed to be fraudulent to court, and the judge decides it's court, then the judge must refer that to the Director of Public Prosecutions. And if it's proven, then the person pays the costs. And that would soften the coughs of a lot of people sitting there, stalled. It's one of a number of measures that could be taken. As I said, this is the first issue that was raised in this Dáil. 4 years later, there's a real
target. But we have focused on the issue of fraudulent insurance claims hugely. And indeed, Jennifer, you're a candidate because of, in some part, because there has been a massive national focus and media focus on insurance claims, fraud claims. But all the data that has come our way in the last number of months has indicated that actually that is a very small part of the story, and that the there has been a huge other part of the story that has been masked because of a focus on this which has suited the insurance industry. Is that not the case?
Yeah, but well, look, there are a range of issues. The judicial commission that was, has only been set up before the recess. Again, a long delay in relation to that. The government set up its own task force early in this Dáil. It came back with a certain amount of recommendations. I have a list. There's about 40 things yet to be acted on. But certainly our position is this, the evidence we have is that other insurers seem to be reluctant to come in here because there isn't a level playing field, because there's a total lack of transparency in the way the whole thing operates.
Harry, this is almost certainly now going to become an election issue, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because insurance premiums and premia and increases will affect the electorate and voters, and they've been faced with very steep hikes in their premia over the past couple of years, and of course it's going to become an election issue, and it's a complex problem. I mean, as John was adverting to the Judicial Commission there, and the government has presented the Judicial Commission as the panacea of all the problems, but it's not. I mean, it will deal with the book of quantum, so you have fraudulent claims, and that's only a small proportion. Then you have awards which are probably higher in this jurisdiction than in the UK.
Yet the cost of claims has gone down.
Well, the overall cost of claims has gone down. I think the role of the Personal Injuries Assessment Board needs to be relooked at again. I think how it started off with great promise and great gusto, but I think that its efficacy has been reduced somewhat over the years as the solicitors have kind of moved in and kind of taken back a lot of what the PIAB was doing. I think you also have to look at the way that insurance companies operate, because they're not only dealing with premiums coming in and out, they're also investment vehicles, and they've been using the money that's been coming in and out to bolster their own profits.
And RTÉ did its own work. I mean, I think the culture has developed that just hasn't been really dealt with sufficiently. Mm. You did your own documentary this week in relation to GPs and solicitors. In some cases, apparently working hand in glove, which is appalling.
Sure, and that's a
culture that allows that.
Yes, people think that's the whole of the problem,
and it's not. No,
there's been a 42%. The central bank reports that there's been a 42% increase, I think, in premiums, even though the quantum of payouts has been lower. So clearly, it is an election. People are faced with huge hikes in their insurance premiums. And if you have creches, play schools, playgrounds, play centres, suddenly being driven out of the market because they can't afford to pay insurance anymore. If you have just one player in a market and there's no competition in the market, clearly there's a systemic problem there as well. And this is something that has to be sorted out.
And in fairness
to Michael Darcy, he has tried really hard to do it, but he has not cracked the nut yet, unfortunately for him.
Well, ISME, the Small and Medium Business Association, put out a very angry statement today, and there was a lot of statements out on this today, but this one really struck me. It had a go in terms of what it referred to as the unhealthy symbiotic relationship between lawyers and underwriters. Neither could extort so much money from citizens without the other, it says. But then it talks about the minister and says we now have the laughable situation where insurers are being castigated by our justice minister and some members of the opposition as the sole cause of the problem, while the hapless Minister of State, Darcy, travels to London and Brussels begging more underwriters to enter the market. This is Laurel and Hardy material. Jennifer.
I haven't read that statement. It's the wording of it is interesting. I look forward to reading it tomorrow. Look, I think that the insurance issue has been the focus of Michael Darcy for a long time. I am glad now to see that the judiciary have become involved, that you have a working group with judges and the government, because that is a huge part of it. And the inconsistency in personal injury claims in particular has been a problem, and I'm glad to see that the judges are actively involved in it now. But they have said, the government has said that if this isn't resolved, it may end up becoming a referendum issue, which is a curious route to have to get to when it can be resolved.
Is that not a crazy suggestion?
It's not a crazy suggestion if you can't resolve a problem within the judicial system, within the administration of justice, that you ultimately resort to having a referendum. It's not a crazy suggestion. It's just one you don't want to ever have to get to.
But like we've been hearing, like the rent freeze, a huge cause for everyone for something to be done about that. Immediate response is, well, that would be unconstitutional. I haven't heard anyone suggest that we should be having a referendum on that, which I would suggest might be a more pertinent issue for a lot of people out there.
Some people have suggested having a referendum on that, and the idea, the issue is in relation to private property, and it's, I mean, like, there's no point in going necessarily going down that particular rabbit hole, but what we're saying is, your point is made.
Well, I think a referendum on the right to housing is not, certainly not a rabbit hole. I think it's an essential.
It's not what I said.
It's an essential element of addressing the housing crisis. It's only one element, but I believe it would be essential.
And I think Patricia,
it was recommended by the Oireachtas Committee on Housing, the All Party Committee.
On okay, just one last thing, because I want to move on.
No, I think Patricia's wider point about I have never understood why the state has kept preschool education and childcare at arm's length. Mm-hmm. The department, like with the splurge of the building of new schools, I've really said 4 or 5 years ago that for every new primary school we built, the state should have been co-locating childcare and preschool facilities on site. It would really benefit parents. It would keep down costs. They could, because the state would be the owner and could control costs. Costs of rent and leasing are the biggest thing for some childcare providers. I see in the budget estimates today, the revised estimates, the department is looking slowly to move into that space, but not for a while. But I think the state needs to get
okay.
more.
I just, that's just one last text here. Can't believe this panel. There are judges giving €20,000 for a cut finger with solicitors getting half it. Then you wonder why premiums are high. Another one, the FAI must be licking their lips waiting for their bailout, which of course won't be called a bailout. So we will move on to the FAI now because of course the Minister for Sport, Shane Ross, was before the Oireachtas Sports Committee today, and he revealed that he had refused a request for an €18 million bailout for the FAI. Here's a flavour of the exchanges at the committee today from Sinn Féin's Jonathan O'Brien.
I mean, we've had situations where League of Ireland supporters for years, including clubs, have been trying to explain exactly how the FAI operates. They have ridiculed us, they've laughed at us, they threw some of us out of football grounds. They actually described the League of Ireland as the problem child. We were not the problem child. The FAI were the absentee fathers. And I forgive me my language because I'm angry about this. They were the absentee fathers who didn't give an absolute bollocks about the League of Ireland. If it goes into examinership, somebody has to step in. And we need to be preparing for that now, Minister.
And then Jonathan O'Brien went on to ask about that, about the fate of the League of Ireland should the FAI go under.
Have we done any work on possible scenarios if the FAI had to go into examinership? Is it possible to continue the league if they're in examinership? If they don't go into examinership and they just go under, does the league automatically collapse?
My guess is, if the FAI goes, the League of Ireland goes the same way. Yeah, I think that's absolutely inevitable.
Now, in the last couple of hours, Ministers Shane Ross and Brendan Griffin issued a statement stressing that they are, in fact, enormously concerned about the future of the League of Ireland, because I suspect there might have been a bit of a backlash from what appeared to be an offhand tone there. In fact, there's been a flurry of statements this evening. Mm. We've got one telling us that the FAI staff representatives have met with the Minister Shane Ross and Ministers Shane Ross and Brendan Griffin about the future of football. And the board of the FAI have also put out a statement saying that while they welcome the opportunity to meet with government on Monday night when what they called confidential talks took place regarding the financial future of the association. But he said that confidentiality was broken in the Oireachtas today, and as a consequence this has made the efforts to secure the financial future of the FAI all the more difficult. Harry, another fine mess.
Yeah, Laurel and Hardy is a kind of a recurrent theme tonight, and there's no other way of putting it. I mean, it's just such a mess, and the figures are really shocking.
But I don't understand. The minister last night came out of that meeting and said, I can't tell you how much they were looking for, and then went into the Oireachtas committee today and blurted out the figure.
Yeah, but the figure was kind of circulating overnight, so people had a fair idea of how much it was. And I suppose when he was asked a question at the Oireachtas committee, in the spirit of openness and transparency, I think he really had to say how much it was. But it is, it's shocking. And you know, we have the future of one of the most popular sports in the country is now at risk. And unfortunately for the FAI, there are two other organisations with which they can be directly compared, the GAA and the IRFU. And there are model cases of how an organisation should be run. And I think the FAI has been the complete opposite in terms of the way in which it has allowed a small cabal control the organisation for years and to propagate their own interests. And there have been suggestions, which I don't think should be done, of disaggregating the organisation to have something for clubs and schoolboys and schoolgirls, to have a League of Ireland and then to have the international UEFA, FIFA, the international team. I actually don't think that would be good in terms of it needs to be cohesive. Mm-hmm. And I think all parts should work. But certainly we need to go in and do a root and branch reform of it. And I think that a bailout will be at some stage inevitable, even though we won't like it. I think because the future of football in the country is at stake, really.
Yeah, the government is not going to let football go under, whatever the issues around the FAI.
That may be the case, but how do they save it? And I think Harry is right about disaggregating, you know, the international from the domestic football or from development, because the role of a sports national governing body is to generate revenue, it's to generate awareness, it's to generate sponsorship from the top down to fund development from the bottom up. And so you can't take those two things apart because they are intrinsically linked. But the difficulty now is that if the FAI goes into examinership, under my understanding of UEFA rules are that Irish teams won't be able to compete at a European level. So that's going to create a difficulty. I think the conversation needs to be had with the world governing body to say, how can you support us in restructuring? Well, that's the way I would tackle it.
I'm just looking at that statement that we got this evening from the ministers, and it said, it's the understanding of the department that if the National Association failed, the National League would be impacted and would cease to exist in its current format. However, we understand that League of Ireland clubs would be in a position to rebound quickly and fulfil fixtures if such a failure were to occur in the FAI. In that case, it would avoid a scenario where national teams would be precluded from international competition, provided a replacement national federation would be in place. So that's the scenario they're facing.
Replacement national federation. That's
the end of the FAI, really, isn't it?
I think that's the only way that's going to go. I mean, when you have the Cozy report saying that the FAI, as it's constituted, is not fit to manage public funds, which it gets and has gotten enormous sums over the years, if you add them up, there's no way forward for what's there at the moment, and I think the priority has to be to preserve and nurture and develop the game that is there, both League of Ireland and the so many clubs, hundreds and hundreds of clubs all around the country, who will suffer as a result of this. And Harry mentioned cohesion. Well, this is one of the problems with the FAI. It didn't foster cohesion. There was no cohesion between international league clubs and the game on the ground, and the work, the absolutely brilliant work that is done by volunteers week in, week out. And, you know, what do they think when they see this? The millions wasted, the millions unaccounted for, and a national association collapsing in front of them. When they compare this to what they do week in, week out with young people, it's absolutely scandalous.
John Lehart, can I quote you, Kevin O'Keefe, your Fianna Fáil colleague, just a few months ago, last April?
Okay.
Like Trump, Delaney has the support of the grassroots across the country, with the Dublin media apparently having a vendetta of sorts against him.
There were
a number, and it's not just in fact,
Michael Healy Minister, Ray.
Well, Michael Healy Ray, most recently at that
and
famous
I think that was
meeting,
the problem.
But also the minister was quite supportive of him up to a year ago.
Professor Niamh Brennan described it on RT very well recently, in an academic sense. There's a really good paper to be written on this, how this represented an organisation captured by one individual that took place over time. What we're seeing is the slow unravelling of all the little bits of this tapestry which are concerning. I mean, you've just mentioned the League of Ireland. There's about 300 players involved in that and all the coaches.
Staff and
I'm wondering, you know, does it trickle down even farther than that? Like, does it get to a point where the schoolboy and schoolgirl leagues get impacted? My view is this. So if you look at what the FAI are trying to do at the moment, they're fighting with the minister, not coming to Iraq, there's committee meetings. That's just, you know, someone needs to tell them, guys, the rules have changed. Calling them a basket case isn't good for the volunteers that Michael talked about on the ground, the people who are the spirit of the entire thing and the dynamism behind it. There's a couple of things that concern me, though. One of the things I read today was that, you know, the FAI is trying to negotiate new sponsorship deals.
Like, on what basis? Where's the transparency that's needed there? On what basis that they, can they even seek to do something like that, given that they've been referred to the Director of Corporate Enforcement, a report has been referred to the Gardaí? I mean, who, what business in their, its right mind could do that? But I think a really important question that needs to be asked is this. They're talking about seeking a new independent chairman and new independent members of its board. I think the Oireachtas Committee ought to be informed of exactly the processes they're going through to make those positions and appointments.
Well, I think that was the discussion they were having with the minister, and no doubt the discussion they had again this evening that the FAI staff had with the minister. Is it helpful for the minister to come out and be so aggressive? I mean, there's votes in having a go at the FAI and at John Delaney
now. Target. He
so,
needs to be careful. I think he needs to be careful. If the government, it's just a final point. If the FAI wants the government's help, then they're going to have to accept conceding some part of the organisation from a management point of view or administrative point of view to the government or a state agency in that. But
Sports
they don't
Ireland,
seem to be anywhere near that space.
I just ask you, Jen, one of the ideas that was floated today was that the RFU could step in relation to their debts connected to the Aviva Stadium and maybe move into that space.
Well, look, I think, as John is saying, the FAI needs to be reconstituted in order to be a functional organisation capable of engaging in contracts, capable of doing anything, including capable of sorting out its own precarious situation, whether that is examinership or otherwise. And the recruitment process, the independent directors, the independent chair, you know, you have to think very carefully from the perspective of those people who would put their hand up or who would take such an appointment right now. What are they walking into? What are the protections that are available for them? And that's why this question about what the structure and what those protections are going to be is so important, and how the FAI, newly constituted, can engage in contractual arrangements. And really, until any of those things are sorted out, it's very hard to make plans or to suggest that it could get involved in this or that or the other. It just can't. And it's just such a betrayal of, as Micheál says, all of the volunteers and all of the youth clubs and like Cabinteely in my own area, soccer clubs that don't have nets on the back of, you know, that don't have nets on the back of the goals. And just how that money has been used so poorly instead of used to support a youth game right across this country. It's so disappointing for everybody involved. But I think that the structure, that the focus from the government at the moment needs to be absolutely around making sure that the structures are capable of simply functioning.
When I was on Cormac actually recently, and I was laughing at myself, I said, look, it reminds me of Anglo. And I actually said the next step, logical step, because it's so similar to the Anglo collapse.
Well, hang on a second now. Let's be very careful about drawing any analogies there, because that's a very specific, different issue. Okay.
And now the IRFU are being looked to step in, you know, a sister, brother, sporting organisation to kind of help them. Similarities are there. Big similarities.
I think the solution to this could be staring us all in the face. There's already a governing body for soccer on this island that's affiliated to UEFA and FIFA, and that's the IFA, the Irish Football Association in Belfast. They could step in. We could have soccer as an all-Ireland sport the way that we do with rugby and with golf and with many other sports. This is a difficult problem that calls for creative solutions. This might be the way to address it.
Well, okay, I'm glad we've sorted that before we move down, because I have to take a break. It took us a while, but we got there, Patricia. Thank you. We'll take a break, but stay with us because we want to talk about developments north of the border after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. Now, Northern Ireland's nurses were today striking for the first time in their organisation's history. Health is one of several factors where important decisions have been postponed during 3 years of no devolved administration in Northern Ireland. Now, of course, there was that round table chaired by Northern Secretary Julian Smith and the Taoiseach Simon Coveney today. Mood was described as positive, and the differences between the parties by one DUP member, I think it was Mr. Poots, he described the differences between the parties as marginal. Patricia, how close are we to this zombie coming back to life again?
I think the mood music is good at the moment. The nurses' strike has kind of, I suppose, focused minds on the very real problems that a lack of devolution is causing. But I think as well as that, This is tied into the Westminster election and the results of that, because what we were saying there were people going, hold on, we cannot depend, of all political opinion in the North, are saying we cannot depend on Westminster to act in the best interests of the people of this part of Ireland. So we need our own devolved administration. And that was both unionist, Republican, nationalist, all shades of political opinion is feeling that way. For a long time, Republicans particularly were saying there's no rush to go back to Stormont. You know, there's no return to the status quo. There has to be fundamental change in the system, how it operates. There has to be, you know, a more open and transparent system. Get rid of the petition of concern, which is essentially a unionist veto. Now, on the doorsteps, they're hearing something different during the last campaign, the Westminster election campaign, which is, look, we do need to get devolution up and running. And I think that that's why there's probably more of an impetus in this round of talks to try and get an agreement. The agreement was there 2 years ago. Everybody except the DUP, even the Irish government, says the agreement was there in draft form. So that's where we are. We need to get back to that stage. And there's an attitude that wants to get it done, I believe.
Yeah, Micheál, what's your read on it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd agree with much of what Patricia says. I think the big change since the Westminster election came with the Westminster election is that the DUP now is no longer in a deal with the Tory government.
Was it always the case, Micheál, that Sinn Féin were never going to go back into those institutions with the DUP?
It was never
while the DUP was propping up the Tory government.
As been said, there was a deal there. It was there in February 2018. And unfortunately, Arlene Foster was not able
to
get it over the line with her own party. I'm not sure what effort she made. We may never know, but that didn't happen. And hence, what has happened since the delay. We were anxious to re-establish the institutions, to re-establish the executive, for the very reason that has been cited, because we want to make progress on the bread and butter issues that are affecting people day and daily across the North, and that we heard, we don't have to hear it, we don't have to go to an election to hear it, we hear it all the time. And I think there's a new dynamic now. I think it's a welcome, despite the victory of the Tory party in England, which I would not, of course, welcome, but at least it has clarified that the DUP, and hopefully it has clarified with the DUP, that they make politics here on this island. They make politics in the north of Ireland. That's what they were elected to do. And that's where they can make a difference for their own community and as part of the collective.
Have you been hearing what's been happening up there today? Are you getting... Because there's not a lot of... information leaking out from those talks, even though we hear the talks are
no,
very
I
focused.
Haven't. I am hearing that people are really determined to make progress, that there is an opportunity now to do that, and that we need to do it urgently, really. And it has to be on a proper basis. It has to be on a basis of agreements already actually made, going back
what
a number
was,
of
remind
years.
Remind me of the key, how you were getting over the Irish Language Act issue in the deal that never happened.
Well, I mean, to state it simply, there was a commitment to Irish language legislation to recognise people's rights as Irish speakers, people who wish to conduct their business in Irish, the recognition of the state. I mean, we still have legislation that bans the use of Irish in the courts, for example. You know, all of those things need to be addressed and can be addressed. They're not insurmountable.
And what was the sticking point for the DUP ultimately?
Well, I mean, I think the sticking point is that they simply did not want to recognise the Irish language, and it became almost a symbol of their wider difficulty with the equality agenda. I think they can overcome that difficulty.
So you think it will be sorted by the 13th of January, Jim?
I would like to think so, and I'd be confident that it can be done, but it requires all the players, all the parties on both governments to be involved.
Harry, the getting this thing sorted, the getting the institutions back up and running in the North will have a political impact on our elections down here, won't they?
Of course it will. And but I mean, there's just a couple of things to say just to preface that. I mean, not only was DUP given a very cogent message by the electorate. Sinn Féin were as well. And in a way, the victory of Sinn Féin in North Belfast, which John Finucane can do extraordinarily well, masked a very disappointing result for the party across other constituencies. They thought that they feared that Colm Eastwood would edge them out in Derry, but in the event he had a whomping majority. Yeah. And an Éire Dua, as they say in Irish, in South Down.
And I saw the figure quoted that was that the party shed 60,000 votes across.
Yeah, they were down a considerable percentage, as were the DUP. And I think that was a message from the electorate that they were sick of the paralysis and sick of the sclerosis that has affected Northern Ireland for the last 3 years. Now, I'm an Irish language enthusiast. I believe that there should be Irish language rights, but I think that it has to be done with a mixture of the carrot and stick, and insisting on rights just became just too much. I mean, it was one of those issues that could be looked at, it could be parked, it could be looked at from different angles in the process of negotiations going forward, as so many other difficult situations have been resolved in Northern politics over the years. So Sinn Féin's insistence on it and the DUP's resistance to it just became a block that became inarguable after a while from both sides. And I think it's something that they just really need to deal with now. I think the Irish Language Act should not be the centre of where the negotiations are. They should be looking at wider issues like health. Look at all the nurses who are striking today about staffing issues and about inadequacy in the service, and all the other deficiencies that have afflicted Northern politics over the past few years. So I'm hopeful that the institutions will be restored and we will begin to kind of get real politics moving there. And of course, that will have an implication for politics in the South.
Jennifer, has the Taoiseach been too busy with Brexit to his credit, been very focused and very upfront on that project that took over all the political space over the last while. But has that taken his focus off what was happening or wasn't happening?
The focus of Brexit was essentially about protecting Ireland and Northern Ireland and peace on this island. That's why he has spent thousands of hours in Northern Ireland dealing with this issue. He's there, been there 3 days straight. He was there 16 weeks over the summer on and off. He has put huge energy into resolving this, and I hope that we will get it sorted out before the middle of January. Well, let's be very clear. What's changed here is that the polarised politics of the North has been changed. The centre ground has reasserted itself with huge gains for the SDLP, huge support for the alliance. And the DUP and Sinn Féin have been told to stop polarising Northern Irish politics and to come back to the institutions that were there all along. There was no need to rely on Westminster when there were political institutions available to sort out health, to do things in relation to the economy, to support workers across Northern Ireland. So the institutions were there all along. And being in government is difficult. It's about compromise. It's difficult compromises. It's working with other people. And the notion that the Irish Language Act and other things like that, as important as they are, would supersede the running of political institutions is a really worrying sort of trend. So I'm very glad that the centre ground has reasserted itself, and I hope that will feed into the discussions in Northern Ireland going on tonight.
Is Sinn Féin chastened a little from the results of those elections?
I won't take a lecture about working in government. We worked for years with the DUP, and you try doing that. That's very, very, very difficult. And Martin McGuinness worked with Ian Paisley, and we saw the work that was done over those years. So we won't take any lectures, particularly from parties that don't stand at all in elections in the North. So we're very focused on actually getting this. These institutions.
And I'm sure the DUP would make similar remarks about working with
Sinn
Féin.
Well, I'm sure they would.
But can I ask you,
the ditch will not solve this problem.
Did you take a lesson, or did you learn lessons from that election that you've just gone through, and indeed the elections that we had in this part of the country?
Well, we take lessons from every election, and I've yet to see the full assessment of it. Obviously,
would your analysis be that people have come in from the polar extremes.
Yeah. Well,
and
first
closer
of all,
there's
a certain narrative, you know, which paints Sinn Féin on one extreme and the DUP on the other, and you know, this branding of people as extremists. I don't accept that. However, the result, we went into that election with 7 MPs. We came out with 7 MPs. There was a percentage drop. I think it was 6.7%. We have to look at that. But the most significant result out of the election was that once again, those parties and voters who oppose the taking of the north of Ireland out of the EU had a very clear majority, as they did in the referendum and in the election which followed it. And that is the big picture is still that we have a British government who wishes to take the north of Ireland out of the EU, away from the rest of Ireland, against the will of the people there, as indeed they do want to do with Scotland. Brexit is an English project conceived and carried out in an English parliament.
Okay, John Lehart, I'm sure Fianna Fáil were watching the performance of Sinn Féin in Northern on those elections very closely.
Well, I'm intrigued, you know, about the Irish Language Act. What collapsed the Stormont Assembly was a fuel scheme. Okay, it was wood chips, fuel scheme.
But it was the Irish Language Act issue that stopped it being put back together again.
It was a range of issues. I never said it was solely the Irish Language Act.
Okay, but I think, look, if you take a helicopter view of what's happened in the north, there have been, I mean, the Taoiseach talked today about tectonic plates moving and moving slowly. There's a number of things, a number of key players that were there 5 or 6, 7 years ago, 6 years ago. McGuinness, Adams, Paisley, you mentioned them. They're gone. That causes a readjustment. I would say the lack of engagement of two other key players, the UK government and the Irish government, in a way not working the Good Friday Agreement the way it would have been worked in previous years, that's also a significant aspect of what's gone wrong.
But you're saying that the eye was taken off the ball?
Absolutely. And Micheál Martin made that point several times. But we're now into very, very tumultuous, entering into a tumultuous period. We have a new government in the UK. Brexit looks like it's going to get done, to use that awful phrase. The consequences for the six counties, the consequences for east-west relations, north-south relations, and relations within the Northern Ireland as well. It's a very sensitive time, and it calls for maturity and wisdom, a little bit of give and take, and not dramatic stuff like the border poll stuff, which is just a big distraction.
That's where I'm just going to go there, because you're talking about the consequences for north-south relations. And of course, two of your colleagues, your Fianna Fáil colleagues, have been out on this in the last few days. Stephen Donnelly saying the government needs to come up with a detailed plan for unity. Says England couldn't give a fiddler's about the north. And Malcolm Byrne coming out today saying United Ireland could rejoin the Commonwealth, make July 12th a public holiday, reserve 30% of cabinet seats for unionists.
Okay, so what that points to me, I think, you know, everybody's entitled to their comments. There have been others before. I'm a Republican. I would like to think my Republicanism has matured over the last 40 years. The old idea of Republican nationalism was that we'd somehow colonise the unionists and they'd
do it. When is the time to talk about a border poll, John?
Well, I tell you, after a long conversation, and a long
education.
But
when do we start the conversation?
Well, I think you could start, not about the border poll, but you need to start a conversation now in this republic about what the idea of a united Ireland might be like. Because that
the conversation's
concept has
already
changed.
Started,
the conversation
though.
Has started.
But it actually hasn't started.
What has Fianna Fáil got against the establishment of an all-Ireland dialogue on what shape a new Ireland should take, a united Ireland should take? People have been asking the Taoiseach the wrong questions. It's not about whether there should be a border poll now.
But you're the question is, looking for the border poll.
The question is, how do we prepare for the inevitable border poll, which will come sooner or later?
But what would a border poll achieve, Micheál? Tell me what a border poll would achieve.
Well, there's been...
It's in the Good Friday Agreement.
The conversation has started, though, John.
It will achieve, if the people vote for it will achieve a united
Ireland. The conversation on what a new Ireland would look like has already started. Well, it has, because if you look at the Ireland's Future, if you look at the Ireland's Future Initiative, a letter to the Taoiseach was published at the start of November calling on the establishment of an all-Ireland citizens assembly to discuss the issues around reunification. You have the head of the ESRI coming out and saying government needs to plan for reunification. You have, you know, academics throughout the island saying we need to look at these issues because the conversations are happening. They are taking place. For the Taoiseach to say out last week that it's unhelpful for Micheál Martin to say that it's, you know, not the right time. It doesn't really matter what they think. The reality is the conversations are taking place. The dialogue amongst between unionism and nationalism in the North is already happening. But the government needs to catch up.
Was the dialogue isn't happening down here. And I just throw one thing out to you.
Well, I was in Croke Park 2 weeks ago and spoke in an event.
No, that's an event. I'm talking about ordinary people on the street. If you want one thing that symbolises people's lack of understanding of it, would be, we'll say, Ireland's called. The amount of people in the Republic...
Well, I can tell you that's my red line.
Can I just make a point?
That's not the deal.
The amount of people in the Republic that rail against that, and yet it is a tiny symbol.
I want to bring Jennifer in on this.
Can we hear
what Jennifer has to say about this? What's your view? Because Neil Richmond, utterly reckless, he says. The Taoiseach has said, made similar remarks in relation to any talk about a border poll.
We've spent the last 3 years in government and working with other parties across the House, trying to preserve stability on this island. Two Brexit deals and hopefully now one in January to get the political institutions that have been there for so long just back up and running. It is an enormously sensitive time. It has been an enormously sensitive time. It has been the major focus of the government for the last 3 years to try to keep things stable on this island. And to throw in the question of a border poll is just deeply unhelpful into that at the moment. What people want to have conversations about anything. Let's have conversations about genuine reconciliation, genuine building of partnerships, genuine building of communities and friendships across this island, north and south, and within Northern Ireland.
Those conversations are not unhelpful when Irish citizens in the north are looking to the government in Dublin to protect their interests.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because I have to slip in another break here, so we'll go to that now.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannon on RTE Radio 1.
And we've just time for a couple of texts. Sinn Féin have wrapped the Irish language around them like a flag and like the way they've tried to appropriate Easter Rising, etc. Why are Sinn Féin and DUP not embarrassed by the fact that they never can sort stuff out between them and always need to be bailed out by London or Dublin? It makes both parties look impotent, says John in Moon Coin. And typical Dublin 4 attitude to the North from the panel. Identity matters there, like it or not. Very shallow commentary. Now, just a word of caution before we go. For those of you living in the west of the country, Galway County Council has advised people to stay indoors with Met Éireann warning of damaging gusts across Connacht tonight. Tonight's programme was produced by Regina Henley, research was by A.B. Philbin Bowman, the broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Jamie Doyle was on sound. And now we hand over to Carl Murray on Late Date.